Okay, may I welcome everyone to today's webinar, Bringing Wales and Iran Together Through Academia and Beyond with John Price. It was originally to have been Professor Lloyd Llewellyn-Jones from Cardiff University to talk about Dylan Thomas in Tehran, but unexpectedly, Professor Lloyd Llewellyn-Jones wasn't able to carry on here, so John Price is going to discuss this. We have an interesting audience here, I think, of people who know about Iran and know about Wales. And so if you will, for those people who don't know very much about the British Institute of Persian Studies, which does kind of the academic body that studies Iran and the wider Persianate world here in the UK, forgive me if I just talk about this for just a second before we move into our own talk. The Persianate world includes territories historically associated with Persian and Iranian culture. So that's Iran, Afghanistan, Central Asia, Transcaucasia, Iraq, the Gulf, Persian Gulf littoral, and South Asia. BIPS, British Institute of Persian Studies, is a UK charity and it's a self-governing membership organization. It's one of the British International Research Institutes called BIRIS, which is a group of research institutes with overseas centers, financially supported by and headquartered at the British Academy in London. BIPS was founded in the UK in 61 and in Iran in 1963. We play a key role in sustaining the academic vitality and increasing the visibility of the field, promoting it to the public and campaigning for greater provision for its study in higher education. We have about 240 members from around the world. Our membership year runs from January to December, but we welcome new membership applications absolutely any time of the year. Membership benefits include the receipt of our journal Iran twice yearly and discounts on other publications and priority bookings for lectures and such like with that. I want to now turn quickly to John Price because I don't want to take too much of his time. John Price is a communications professional representing organizations and individuals in health, housing, environment, and politics and not-for-profits. In 2020, inspired by his Iranian mother and his Welsh father, he launched something called Kimranian, a platform that brings Welsh and Iranian cultures and people together. In 2022, Kimrani expanded with Wales Week Iran, part of Wales Week Worldwide Initiative that promotes Wales to the wider world. In October 2021, he moved back to his hometown of Cardiff after living in and around London for more than 8 years. John is going to tell us all these kinds of things about the particular project and his agenda for the future. We plan BIPS and Wales Week and Wales Week Iran plan to do this on an annual basis. And so this really is the first webinar of a series of activities and other webinars that we're going to be doing in the short, medium, and long term. So without further ado, John Price, thank you very much for stepping in at the last moment, and off we go.
Thank you so much indeed. Hello, everybody. I'm just going to share my screen so that you can see a presentation. I'd like to assure you, whilst it is a PowerPoint presentation, it's not a death by PowerPoint, as the classic saying goes. But thank you all so much for coming today. I really appreciate you all taking your Wednesday evenings and your St. David's Day evenings off, and the Welsh folk out there, I think you all have various celebrations to go to, I'm sure, but I appreciate you having your time this evening. As Andrew says, this is a PowerPoint presentation, a webinar on how Wales and Iran links together, or how all the work that I'm doing to bring them two together in a more cohesive sort of way, and about why I'm doing it and what inspires me, and the opportunities that I can get the wider audience and yourselves to bring this to life as well. So as Andrew says, to introduce myself, my full name is John Saleh Price. The joys of having my Welsh and Iranian names in my name. I'm named after my great grandparents, so that is where my name comes from. As Andrew said again, I've got an Iranian mother and a Welsh father. My mother's from Tehran. My father is proper Cardiff. I was born and raised in Cardiff. I was educated in a school called Cateys, and I went to Bangor University. So I've been very much educated in Wales, across Wales, and I work in PR and communications. That's my website. I work elsewhere for an organization called Grasshopper that is based in Cardiff. They, as Andrew says, represent organizations, environment, energy, housing, and we work on political and community engagement as well. So what is Qumranian? So some people might not be aware that what it all stands for. So I'm, as a PR person, love to merge words together because that's what makes effective campaigns, so long as it's not completely cheesy. But I think people quite like this, how the word Qumranian works. It's a combination of the word Cymru, which is Wales in Welsh, and Iranian. There have been some suggestions that perhaps if you wanted to combine the two together in terms of a language, you could say that you're speaking Pelsh, but it depends on how you would want to interpret that. But I've kept the word Qumranian because I think it's got a quite nice ring to it. That's the website over there of where you can see all the various stories and kind of the motivation behind it. I founded this website in August 2020. So this is a what I like to call a lockdown idea, really. At that particular moment, or at least earlier on in that year, I was working in the communications office for the NHS. As you can imagine, at the start of that pandemic, it was very, very busy. But I thought to myself, to escape the woes of what we were going through in terms of lockdowns and in terms of escaping from the news at that particular moment, I thought, well, what can I do that can alleviate that? So I decided, because I was so passionate about Wales and Iran, and I'm passionate and I'm proud of being both Welsh and Iranian, I felt as if I could do a bit more than be proud of my blood and actually make it something a bit more useful for the wider community, really. And whilst the Iranian community, or the Iranian population in Wales and the UK as a whole, is growing, I thought, well, what better way for us to actually create that this sort of community, which I felt as if, particularly at the start of the pandemic, the sense of community was very important. So that is where I came up with the idea of Qumranian. It, as I said, as Andrew said, it aims to link Wales and Iran together. So my main focus is really is on how it links through culture and history and through the people. So in the next slide, I'll explain what makes up a Qumranian person. Through travel, so if anybody's had adventures in either of those countries, or if you know you're a Welsh person, for example, that's traveled to Iran, we've got some great stories on there on the website for that. And also through academia. So I think it's quite important for research to be at the heart of what we do here, because I think there's more that connects Iran and Wales, and we'd like to think, and I'll explain that more in the next slides as well. So the Qumranian community itself, it mixes, it comprises of the following people. So again, people like myself who are both of Welsh and Iranian parents, or if you have Welsh and Iranian grandparents, I always find that when it comes to Welsh people in particular, how a lot of the Welsh football players, for example, they are not Welsh through their parents, they're Welsh through their grandparents, but they qualify as the Welsh international. So I always say, you know, the most obscure links, I allow you into the community sort of thing. All everybody's allowed sort of thing. But also there's people who have strong links between both countries. So that's not necessarily a you know, a Welsh or Iranian person themselves. It could be a English person, for example, who has strong interests, or, you know, have done a lot of work on both Wales and Iran. And I think that's, you know, that's always widely encouraged. And these are the sort of people I'm definitely interested in hearing. Also, the Welsh people have strong connections with Iran. So this, for example, you know, as I said, if you're a Welsh person, for example, who's lived in Iran for, you know, days or weeks or years or whatever, it's always good to hear those stories. When I was younger, people would always ask me where I was from, and I would always say I'm half Welsh, half Iranian. And people would say, oh, I've been to Iran in the 70s, absolutely loved it. And there was those kind of conversations where I wanted to capture. And likewise, again, we've got some great stories, for example, of Iranian people who have strong connections, who have lived in Wales. So, you know, as in the most recent census statistics that I found, there is a 1,436 Farsi speakers in Wales, which may not sound a lot, but actually we're a population of just 3 million in Wales. So it's quite, that's quite a high percentage considering the 2011 census, that was only about 500 less. So that number is growing, and actually there is a genuine enthusiasm for people in Wales wanting to learn or have that fascination towards Iran and the Persian language as well. And people, of course, with an interest in Wales and Iran are also welcome in this community and want to share their stories, and actually who want to just keep in touch. So who are the well-known Qumranians? These are the people who have kind of the top five. Again, these are all, they're all Cameroonian through various degrees. So the first person here is Josh Navidi, who is a rugby player. He's a Welsh rugby international. He's captained the Welsh side a few times as well. He's got a Welsh mother and an Iranian father. His interview was on the Cameroonian website. As to is Eddie Temple Morris. He's got as you can see, people's surnames are kind of a giveaway of how their families are linked. So Eddie Temple Morris, for example, has an Iranian mother and a Welsh father. Actually, his Welsh father was quite a well-known MP back in the day. So he's a DJ for Virgin Radio. He is on straight after Chris Evans, if anybody knows, the redhead Chris Evans, as opposed to the Hollywood star Chris Evans. So he is on between 10 and 12 o'clock. He's in the later mornings. And for people who want to carry on with the Cameroonian theme during the day, then at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, they can go straight from listening to Eddie Temple Morris and hop on to BBC Radio Wales, where Behnaz Akar is the presenter for that radio, for her own radio show on Radio Wales. She's also a BBC weather presenter for BBC Wales as well. So she's very much one of the faces of BBC Wales. While she doesn't have Welsh in her blood, she's was born in Shiraz and she was raised in Swansea. So she's very much got those strong Cameroonian links there. We've also got Shaheen Jafar Ghali. He is, again, he's got a Welsh mother and Iranian father. He was famous, he started becoming famous at the age of 13, where he was featured on Britain's Got Talent. He was a singer back then, and you know, was massively popular, and actually sung at Michael Jackson's funeral. So that, again, that was a massive Cameroonian success there at such an early age. And then later on, he continued in acting. He was in EastEnders for a couple of years, and for the last 4 years, he's been on BBC One's Casualty. So he's on prime time Saturday night. And the other person you got here is Omid Scobie, who isn't so well known as such, unless you're a keen follower of the goings on with the Prince Harry and Meghan Markle saga. He's written one or two books about them. People say that he's an insider, but again, his links to Cameroonian is quite tenuous, and somebody I'm kind of keen to look into a bit more, because he was born in Wales. I'm not necessarily sure if he's got a Welsh parent, but he's certainly got a Romanian mother. So that is somebody who is of keen interest as well. So what are the similarities between Wales and Iran? So these are quite tenuous, but at the same time, I always find them quite interesting, because I don't believe in coincidences. I think Wales and Iran have a lot more to celebrate the similarities than you think. So for example, the landscape of Wales and Iran. So you've got the top left image there is Mount Snowdon, and at the bottom right, you've got a picture of Damavand Mountain. So they're both in the north of their countries, which I find quite fascinating, really, about how closely connected that is, even though the Damavand is five times the size of Snowdonia. And obviously you've got Tehran, which is very close, and Cardiff, being the capital of Wales, is not so close to Snowdonia. It's still that the landscape is quite similar. March is also a month of celebration. So today, as you may or may not be aware, it's St. David's Day. So Dydd Gwael Dewi Hapus to everyone listening today. And the 20th of March, or at least the exact moment of the spring equinox, is Nowruz, so it's Persian New Year. So again, it's quite a lot of celebrations that goes on. Again, this is my time of year where I like to party, let's put it this way. There is also quite poignantly, I'd like to think that there's been quite a similar long-standing history of defiance and togetherness. And when I say that, it's obviously we all hear about what's going on in Iran at the moment in terms of a potential transition of change. There's always talk about what's going to be happening in the next phase of the Iranian history. And that's been a long-standing history of how Iran has been seen in the past and the present, and also, more importantly, the future. And Wales have had that as well. I think that there is that long-standing history. If you want to, for any of the Iranian people out there that want to learn more about Wales, it's always good to Google the a man called Owain Glyndŵr. And I think he is, you know, about his struggles to get Wales to where he wanted it to be, or at least his people wanted it to be as well. So again, it's that. I think they can learn a lot from each other, Welsh and Iranian. At least historians can actually learn a lot from each other about how both can be seen in the future. And you could also, I was having a discussion with somebody the other day about the debate about the flags and about how Wales have got a pride in its flag, but then at the moment Iranians don't have much pride in the current flag. And somebody interestingly said, well, actually, because Wales is still part of the United Kingdom, there isn't much pride in the Welsh and people in terms of the Union Jack because there's no Welsh representation on that particular flag. So again, it's those sort of interesting discussions that could be had. Also, the passion for them as a language. So obviously, you've got Wales who have Welsh speakers, and Iranians are Farsi. Because I was watching, interestingly, on BBC4, The Art of Persia, which has interviews with Lloyd Llewellyn Jones on there. And it was always, what was quite evident was the fact that despite the fact that people wanted to, you know, invade Persia and actually wanted to have Persia in a certain way, one thing that had been kept consistent is the Persian-ness, as it were, and also the Farsi language is such a strong resilience, as does the Welsh language. And the Welsh government in Wales have that passion in wanting to get more people to speak the mother language as well. So they have a goal of 1 million Welsh speakers by 2050. Whether that is achievable or not, that's another matter altogether. But there's still that kind of moment of that sense of pride, national pride, and actually maintaining that. Also, it's about when we're talking about culture. We've got some groundbreaking poetry that's, you know, very strong within Wales and Iran. I've got here those two examples of Dylan Thomas, but we would have had the discussion on today, but we will have that another time. And in Iran, you have Nimar Yusij, which, again, those two people helped revolutionize the way that poetry is seen today. And you will see in history as well about how groundbreaking a lot of these poets are, who happen to be Welsh and who happen to be Iranian as well. So those sorts of people are quite groundbreaking in that sense. Also quite fun, there's the love of tea and cake. As you can see, there's a traditional Welsh cake up on the top right hand side, where you have the traditional Welsh cakes have raisins in them. I'm personally not a fan of raisins, so I normally have the alternative of the chocolate chip. A cop-out I completely appreciate, but it's also, you know, they're incredibly tasty. And if you come to Wales, for people who haven't been to Wales before, I do suggest you go in to buy a traditional Welsh cake. And also in Iran, I think it's called a heart cake or a love cake. It's a pistachio lemony sort of cake. Again, absolutely delicious. And that sense of, you know, camaraderie and that strong sense of community. As I said here, a strong neighborhood spirit is definitely seen in both Wales and Iran. And what connects the two together is the love of gossip. I'm not sure if you can see, there you go, the love of gossip. I always find that quite funny, because every time I go and see, you know, my grandparents from both sides of my family, there is that strong sense of people wanting to talk about other people and, you know, having that strong sense of conversation, which I always find is quite important. So what have I discovered so far? So you can see from the Comeranian website, you'll be able to see some of these stories, but I've given some examples here of what I've discovered so far. So for example, and we might do an event on this, as Andrew said, we're going to make this an annual sort of thing, between a partnership work between Wales Week, Iran, Comeranian, and also the British Institute of Persian Studies. But we will do something about Sir William Jones, whose father discovered pi, so for those mathematicians out there. And Sir William Jones is the supposed founder of Persian studies. So that was a couple of, you know, I think it's the 18th century. I might have to look back at that again. But Yeah, definitely really, really interesting story there about how Persian studies actually came to the UK and obviously William Jones being a Welshman. Llandudno, no, as you can see on the bottom right, you can see the great Orm Cashmere goats. They were trending quite a lot on Twitter and on social media during the start of the pandemic, particularly because the great Orm goats actually just stay in the mountains, they mind their own business sort of thing. But they were set free when there was lockdowns because obviously people weren't really allowed to go out. So the goats had roamed around, and you can, if you Google Great Orm goats, you'll start to see them kind of, nattering and looking at people's gardens, and I think it's quite humorous. But what I found more poignantly for the Cymreians, when I was researching into these goats, quite fascinatingly, when Queen Victoria became queen in 1837, obviously she would be showered with gifts, and the Shah at the time, so the Muhammad Shah Qajar, she as a gift gave some of these goats from Persia to Queen Victoria. Queen Victoria obviously raised them the best as she could, but what she did later on in her she obviously helped her make sure that they made lots of babies, and afterwards would give them to the Royal Welsh Fusiliers. And the Welsh Royal Welsh Fusiliers obviously were doing their tours, and then had given some of those goats to Llandudno, which is right in North Wales. If anybody in who hasn't been to Wales before, I'd like to say that I'm quite biased when I say this, but I think Llandudno is probably the best seaside town in the UK. It's a bold claim, I completely appreciate that, but it's actually, I'd like to think that that's true. It's such a beautiful, beautiful town. Oh, obviously, Iran and Persia can't go without talking about Omar Khayyam. Omar Khayyam's works are actually translated in Welsh and can be seen in Aberystwyth National Library and also in Bangor University. As somebody who visited Bangor, who studied at Bangor University, I was a bit gutted that I didn't know about this whilst I was at university, so I could actually have seen it. But I will need to go to Bangor at some point and actually have a look at these works. I'm in Cardiff at the moment; it's about 4 hours by train, but I will make that effort. Quite an interesting one at the bottom paragraph, bottom bullet point there, when I say a folk tale about how the first Welsh settlers were in fact Persian. It's the joys of Googling Wales and Iran and going to page 37 and then discovering this very random, tenuous link about this storyteller who is an English storyteller who goes to Anglesey, and these Welsh villagers will go and say, oh, talk about how the Persian fairies, as they were, who weren't happy at their homes back thousands of years ago and had then settled in Wales. And again, it's those kind of tenuous but quite fun links really that can make it work. As you can see at the bottom left, you've got one of the earliest maps of Persia that's been created by a Welshman. I think his name is Emmanuel Bowen. Again, it's a story on the Cymreian website that you can have a look at. That can tell you about, I think he was commissioned by one of the royal members of the royal family in the UK. So again, quite an interesting map that was done in the yesteryear. Some of the successes I've seen when it comes to the Cymreian, since launching Cymreian, I first of all had some interviews with some big names. So you will see an interview with Josh Navidi. One of my proudest interviews is an interview with Terry Yorath. Terry Yorath is a legend in Cardiff. He was a very famous football player back in the 60s and 70s. Once people don't know who he still is, he is the father of Gabby Logan, who is the very famous broadcaster on the BBC. And it was very interesting because his link to Iran was basically he was the captain of the Welsh team of the first time Wales played Iran in 1977. So it was in preparation of Iran competing in the 1978 Football World Cup. And they had this friendly, and he was in Tehran for about 4 or 5 days. But then we had a really good 45-minute chat about his time there. And so it was a really, really interesting interview. Again, I'm always exploring new links and communicating with rising stars. So you'll see interviews with I've got he was a fellow who I spoke to who has got a new had a new sitcom back in August, which had also had an interesting. It was a Cymreian sitcom, which I think you'd be able to still catch it on Dave, which is again it's very funny, but also he talks. It was a kind of almost semi autobiographical in the sense that it was about a Cymreian guy who was trying to discover who he was, sort of thing, and you know, it's very funny. And I think that those sorts of people are the people that we want to recognise as well. Always follow the Cymreian hashtag on Instagram and Twitter, which I don't really have a an account for Cymreian. I've been thinking about it, but actually, I think hashtags are quite more efficient in that sense in terms of trying to get people to. Get it to trend. I think this is me trying to use my social media professional cap on. As I said, the community is growing. Particularly, obviously, my main focus has been on what's going on in Wales. Obviously, we've been seeing the protests taking place across the world, what's going on in Iran at the moment. And I've been communicating with a lot of the new Iranian contacts I've not spoken to as a result of these protests. Because they are starting to be more widespread, and actually it's always good to hear their stories and their inspirations. I'm going to show you a video very shortly, but let me just give you a background. So again, with football, I'm saying this because I've got an interest in football, but I plan to expand on that a bit more. So when Wales and Iran were in the same group in the World Cup that was just took place just a few short months ago, I must be honest with you, I was absolutely dreading it. I thought of all the groups of both Wales, who was never made it to the World Cup since the late 1950s, and Iran, who wanted to prove a point, of course they had to be grouped in, you know, together. So I wanted to take it to my own advantage. Obviously, this was kind of the first real opportunity to make a face-to-face event. So we managed to do that with the Cymreian, and when I approached a few venues, the Norwegian church actually in Cardiff Bay had said yes, it'd be great to do an event because actually we're planning to show the match anyway, and let's just, you know, do something to celebrate both communities. So it was a huge buzz in that, actually, because in Wales, the Football Association of Wales had this campaign called Goyl Cymru, which had, you know, was basically a collection of events that they were supporting to celebrate the fact that Wales were in the World Cup. And this is the video that they created, which if I share this now, I've enabled the sound here. As you can see, I'm sharing the whole screen. Let me just share the whole screen here. And I'm gonna play this and hopefully you'll be able to hear it. I mean, it's just music you'll be hearing anyway. So if you can't hear it, then you know you're not hearing any voices or anything. So. As you can see there, that was, as I said, it was such a successful event, and actually it was a real good celebration of Wales and Iran together, and I think I was pretty proud about how it went. There was a lot of doubt around whether Iran should be competing altogether, but for my selfishness, I was glad that they did in order for us to kind of create an event like that, and it was really successful, and it was great to see Wales appreciating those cultures more as well. So these are kind of my interpretations of what I think has been the joys and the challenges of launching the Cymreian. I think there is a great sense of enthusiasm and fascination of what both Wales and Iran together. And I think that that's been quite evident, and people have been, you know, following the website quite well. We've been developing partnerships. Partnerships like the British Institute of Persian Studies are quite important because, and I'll tell you why about kind of meet the challenges of what we're trying to achieve here. In Wales generally, particularly over the last 30 to 40 years, there was a welcoming rise of multiculturalism and the welcoming of, you know, Wales, I'd like to think, is a largely welcoming country anyway. I think we've got that pride of, you know, bringing, you know, as I said, we bring adversity, you know, when we celebrate adversities and actually take advantage of it in order for it to, you know, make Wales a better country. As I said, there's a growing Iranian voice in Wales, particularly over the last few months, but obviously, when I mentioned before about there's almost 1,500 Farsi speakers in Wales. Is that growing voice? And I think, you know, one of the interesting things I find about Iran is that, you know, people always say it's shrouded in mystery. Obviously, it's not shrouded in mystery in the Middle East, but then they always say it in the UK and, you know, perhaps in the United States as well, that, you know, people don't know much about it. But then there is a lot of resources out there where you can understand more about Iran. I think one of the more, the documentary that I really enjoyed watching, it might be still on ITV Hub now, it's when Joanna Lumley did a tour of the Silk Road. And she dedicated an entire episode to Iran because she actually managed to get into the country. And it was such an interesting insight about how, because she was a vegetarian, for example, she was talking about how great that there was a great vegetarian range of things, of food in Iran, despite the fact that people tend to associate Iran with, you know, lots of meaty stews and kebabs. The challenge is, there is a understandable reluctance to share personal stories. I mean, when I've spoken to a few Iranians in particular who have, you know, who are living in Wales, some of them would rather not share their stories because of personal safety, of their safety reasons. It's a horrible, you know, thing to say, but actually what's going on in Iran has given that sense of fear of if they shared more about themselves and about their struggles, perhaps, in getting into this country. I think there's that genuine risk. And so when I always say to people, share stories in your own time, and actually the Cameranian website is a safe space to do that. A big challenge, both personally and through the Cameranian, is about accessing resources in Iran. I'd love to, for example, do more of my family tree. I've gotten a great family tree about my Welsh side of the family, but, you know, trying to access any, you know, birth records or any family records actually in Iran is a challenge. And it's the same thing with for the Cameranian website. I don't have enough contacts in Iran who would have that sort of access that I would be able to get. And also the challenge has been around politics. Again, I strive for the Cameranian website to be as apolitical as possible. Sometimes that isn't so possible with, you know, what's going on at the moment. But I think, you know, we're trying to share about the links of how we, as I said before, about the history, about culture, about, you know, about the more interesting things compared to some of the emotional things that's going on at the moment. I always feel that it's, Cameranian, as I said, it's a safe space. But at the same time, I'd like it to also have where people want to express themselves. So people want to talk about politics, they're more than welcome to talk about politics on the Cameranian website. Especially, you know, we're living in a free speech society, and I want to kind of embody that in what I'm trying to do here. Partnership working, as I said, is quite important. So this is more about what Welsh government want to do ultimately. So the Welsh government will have been inspired through what's happened over the last few years with Brexit, for example, but also more generally, Wales wants to be seen as more globally recognised. So this time, say 10 years ago, I would say to somebody abroad, I'm from Wales, you would have to then try and, you know, identify where Wales is. And if I say the UK, people say, still don't know much about the UK. And there was this one person I spoke said, well, I'm from 150 miles away from London. People are like, oh, London. I'm like, oh, it's not quite London, but okay, fine. But I think certainly through sport, actually, and also through, you know, global Welsh stardom. So say Tom Jones is starting to talk more about Wales than I think he's ever done before. And I think that those sort of stars. When I say to people I'm from Wales, people say, oh, Gareth Bale. And, you know, I think we're getting there. I think Wales is getting there. And I think the Welsh government want to really form those partnerships through academia as well. So you've got, you know, global, if you Google Global Wales, they've got Welsh universities really want to partner with other universities abroad. Again, Wales, here on behalf of Wales Week Iran, which I've formed last year, I was approached basically by Wales Week Berkshire. So how Wales Week Worldwide works is that it celebrates Wales around the world through events largely. So we have, for example, Wales Week London, we have Wales Week Berkshire, we have Wales Week New York, Wales Week Dubai, we have Wales Week everywhere. Always at this time of the year. And those events are actually always in those places. So Wales Week London is about celebrating Wales in London. It's about celebrating Wales in Alabama, for example, or in Denver, or anywhere in the world. But obviously we can't do so much of that with Iran, because obviously I've never, you know, I'm almost 32 years of age. I've never been to Iran. As much as I'd love to, I've never been. But that doesn't mean that we can't bring Iran to the world. And that is why, you know, having Wales Week Iran has been so important. So the person who launched Wales Week Berkshire, who I'm good friends with, had said, let's go and, you know, if you wanted to build that through events, Wales Week Iran should be the way forward. And actually it's been a real, real good platform for us. And the British Institute of Persian Studies can actually play a big part in this. I strongly feel that. And actually, as Andrew said, we're hoping to make this an annual thing. Obviously, we'll have the Dylan Thomas event coming up hopefully later in the year. But we're making this at this time of the year, around St. David's Day, make, you know, more in person and some online events there as well. And the Iranians have a part to play as well. I mentioned before about the fact that we haven't got many Iranian resources of who would like to be able to help. And I strongly think that that could be the case here as well. So this is my cheeky request, because obviously when it comes to the Khomeinian website, I want to populate it as much as I can. And in order to do that, I always just need new stories and I always need new adventures, for example. So when I say adventures, as I mentioned before, it'd be great to have discussions on, you know, Welsh people who have been to Iran, or Iranians who have, you know, strong links with Wales. Always just get in touch with me. You know, get in touch with me and I will, you know, we can make a story work, and actually it'll be great to promote what you're promoting in that as well. I'm always looking for more Khomeinians to come forward. As I mentioned, we got the earlier about the description of who Khomeinians are. Doesn't matter about what your links are to both Wales and Iran, please get in touch and we can make a story work, or we can do, you know, work together and you can see how we can expand again. And because a lot of my stories have been, you know, Googleable or Wikipedia, you know, have been seen through the deep ends of Wikipedia. It'd be great to have stories that I can't find on the internet. I strive to go to the British Library in central north of London, because I think that there are some angles there that can really help. But I need to actually find the time to get to London, that without, you know, I need to go to that part of London. It's the joys of going to London and just being stuck in the south of London without having to go north of London. So that's what I'm kind of looking for as well. So if anybody has got any stories that I can't find on the internet and are super true and super interesting, please do get in touch. These are the angles I'm working on. And the next slide, I'll be showing you three villages that have, you know, three villages in Wales and three villages in Iran that have the same name. So it'd be great to have to see if anybody knows of these villages and actually know if there is a link or if there is some sort of thing that we can actually identify as what's similar and see what we can do. One of the biggest institutions in Iran pre 1979 revolution was the Iranian National Ballet. One of the most famous people who were there who actually took part in the ballet was Debbie McGee. So Debbie McGee is very famous in the UK. She was the magician's assistant and actually got married to Paul Daniels. And it was such a shame, and obviously, that they had to disband the moment that the revolution had taken place. But apparently there is one Welsh woman who took part, and her name is Bethan Williams. And Bethan Williams is probably one of the most common names in Wales. I have no idea how to trace a person called Bethan Williams, or can have anybody's got any links to this particular Bethan Williams, who was a ballet dancer in Tehran. So if anybody knows, please do get in touch. And I'm also looking through a profile of a person called David Neil McKenzie, who was a scholar of Iranian languages, who I think he's not, well, to my knowledge, he's not Welsh, but then he definitely settled in Bangor for a good number of years until his death in 2001. So again, I'm looking for information about kind of what was got him interested in Iranian languages, and also what got him interested in, you know, settling into North Wales. Because Bangor, I said I went to Bangor University, but I knew I was going to be there just for 3 years. It's mainly a holiday destination around North Wales, Anglesey, that sort of area. So if anybody has got any links or any information about this David Neil McKenzie, that's more than what I can find on Wikipedia, please do get in touch. So I mentioned the villages. These are the three villages that we have, that I've found that are both in Wales and in Iran. Tirabad, that's in mid Wales, but also in the northwest of Iran. I've actually got in touch with Powys, in the county of Wales, where Tirabad is. I actually contacted their historical society to see if there is a link between Tirabad in Wales and Tirabad in Iran. And all the response I got was, I don't know, but if you've got anything, please do get in touch. Which, like, as you know, that wasn't the answer I was hoping for, but at the same time, there could be some strong interest in that. Avan, or Avan, as you might say in Iran, is actually not a village in Wales. It's actually a river that's from near Swansea and near the Talbot and goes up towards mid Wales there. And it's also quite not so far away from Tirabad, but as you can see, the zoom of Wales is very different to the zoom of Iran. As you can imagine, Iran's a lot bigger than it is than Wales. And for the final place is Babel, which is apparently only 8 miles away from Tirabad in Wales, but then it's also at the southwest part of Iran. Again, I always look for the most tenuous links, but then the more tenuous, the more interesting I feel. So those are the two, those are the three places I had in mind. But again, if you've got any new angles for me that I haven't really thought of, because it's only just me that does the Khomeini website, nobody else does it, but if anybody had any more links or any interesting stories for me, please do get in touch. That's me done. But if you want to, feel free to follow me on, I'm on Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Just search, that's my full name there. I use my full name for all of them. And my email address, if anybody wanted it, was john-price@hotmail.co.uk. And I'll probably put that in some sort of chat or put on the Q&A or something. But that is me done. That's the beauty of, I said to Andrew before this presentation started, it's my first time I did this. I did it in 45 minutes. The second time I rehearsed this, it took me 30 minutes. So I'm glad it took me 45 minutes this time. So Andrew, I'm happy to hear from you and any questions that people may have.
That's terrific. Thanks, John, very much. Appreciate it. Much appreciated. I had a couple of questions here that have come in. And again, we're using the Q&A function. We do have about-ish 10 minutes or so to go before we kind of clock off. So one of the questions I had is, could you talk a little bit about places where Persian is studied or where taught in Wales, including at the universities or colleges or with tutors, you know, to your knowledge, where are, in terms of academics, clearly the question is, what sorts of things are going on, you know, in Welsh institutions?
Absolutely. Well, it was an interesting question because actually the main place is Cardiff University is the place to go to. And actually, Lloyd Llewellyn Jones is the professor of Iranian studies. So he hosts modules and, you know, he helps people in terms of their dissertations about Iranians and Persian studies themselves. So Cardiff University is definitely the place to go to. And of course, there are plenty of Iranian academics up and down the country, but Cardiff University is definitely the place that everybody seems to be talking about. Interestingly, with Cardiff University, if you want to expand on that particular university, people you know, I know through my family, for example, who went from Iran to Cardiff, they've tend to go because of the reputation around engineering. But you might have seen some of my interviews about how Cardiff University is well known in Iran for journalism. And so, you know, about how obviously a lot of Iranian women, for example, can't really become journalists in Iran unless they had to do things in a way that they might not want to do it. So Cardiff University has got a very good university, it's a very good reputable university for journalism in that regards. You know, a lot of the famous BBC presenters have started out at Cardiff University. But in terms of Persian studies, definitely Cardiff University has got a really good department and facilities.
Very good. I had another question about, which is quite interesting to me, is about food, bouncing off of Joanna Lumley and your earlier discussions of this. Are there any Welsh-Iranian dishes of which you know?
Oh.
Either, you know, nationally or maybe, you know, within families, what people have done?
Well, you could always link the two together, because I always say, you know, when it comes to, say, a spaghetti bolognese, obviously spaghetti bolognese isn't Iranian, but then I always say, I create a Welsh spaghetti bolognese by replacing the onion with the leek. So you can always go by the traditional kind of Iranian herbs, for example, and put it in a Welsh rarebit, for example, and you can make it as Iranian as you can in that way. Or you can put, I'm not sure how big leeks are in Iran, for example, but if you wanted to put some leeks in your gourmet sabzi, then you can always create your own fusion. But actually, there are some interesting British Iranian chefs that kind of bring Iranian food to life. So I'm sure a lot of people here might be familiar with the cook called Sabrina Gayor. She was actually on Steph's Big Lunch on Channel 4 today, creating a potato and leek bhaji, which of course, bhaji is Iranian, but at the same time, you know, neither would you really associate putting potato or leek in a bhaji. So it's, you know, you can create quite a lot of things that might be traditionally Welsh or traditionally Iranian and actually fuse them together. If anybody wanted to create a Iranian cookery book, I'm more than open to doing that and helping out the best I can.
Are there any sort of local substitutions that you've found, you know, along those kinds of lines where people have, again, sort of individually at home, as it were, people saying, well, I can't get this, but I can get this. And so you retain this.
I mean, you'd be surprised, especially if you're in the urban places. And obviously, if you're in London, there's plenty of Iranian shops. In Cardiff, there are an increasing number of Persian shops. If you go to City Road, there are some places where you can actually get some proper Iranian herbs that have been transported from Iran to the UK. So you can certainly find that. And actually, if you wanted to say, cook a gourmet sabzi, and you need to use those precise herbs to actually create one, then you can actually go to them. That's the beauty of this, of the rise of the multiculturalism. Again, with my food palate isn't that as strong as it probably should be, but certainly if anybody wanted to make a Bessenjoun or make a Welsh version of Bessenjoun, then I'm more than open to happy to hear about it. Our range of pomegranates in Wales and perhaps not as good as you probably would see in more Mediterranean or in the Middle East, but certainly you can try and, you know, expand on that. There's only a small handful of Iranian restaurants in Wales as well, I may add. There's only two in Cardiff and two in Swansea. Hmm. There aren't that many, you know, there's not much that's been done to promote Iranian food. And actually, there's a delivery service in South Wales called The Taste of Persia, which I suggest that people want to search and order food themselves. They're based, the guy Cameron is based in Abergavenny, but you can deliver across South Wales should people have wanted to. But again, that means we're expanding. When I was younger, there was just one Iranian restaurant, you know, so it is definitely getting more as the time goes on.
Interesting you should mention Bessenjoun, because back before I came to the UK in LA, way large number of years ago, I tried to cook Bessenjoun, and of course I had to do a lot of subs. I didn't have a car at the time to go around LA and find what there was. I was very quite local. I managed to get out something, I think, which was palatable to people who didn't know it. but nowadays, of course, you can get lots more ingredients in lots more places.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Closer. And I've given up on trying to imitate that. That was, again, also before there was an awful lot of Iranian cookbooks. Now, of course, this is the question, but back in the later 70s, you couldn't get really much anything. There was no internet. There were no, and again, substitutions were the order of the day. It was palatable, but I don't think to anybody who really knew what Fessenden was supposed to be. Fortunately, that wasn't the people who sat around down at the table, so that wasn't really the big problem there. So,
I can imagine. And one of the things that you will notice that Iranians in particular, I mean, I remember, you know, I know this is not an Iranian example, but then Chinese people are very passionate about traditional Chinese food. And if they go to a Chinese restaurant, say in Wales or anywhere else in the UK, that's, you know, anglicized food, as it were. It's, you know, it doesn't rub the right way. And I think Iranians kind of find that way as well. I think, you know, they know the right taste. They know what, you know, what makes a good saffron ice cream, for example. They know how, you know, how the best way to use saffron, which obviously has to be done delicately because of its value. But at the same time, it's, you know, there's an art to Persian food. Let's put it this way.
I'm open to taking any more questions if people have questions or comments here. Do you, can you talk a little bit about, John, because we only have a minute or two left, about the sorts of things you and I and Professor Llewellyn Jones talked about in terms of activities that we're going to do in the future? I know there was one talking, well, go ahead.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, the beauty of this partnership is that the British Institute of Iranian Persian Studies has been very supportive of what I'm trying to achieve and what we're trying to achieve in promoting Persian studies elsewhere and finding the links of promoting that elsewhere. As we mentioned before, we were trying to, we want to make this an annual thing. Wells Week worldwide is a fortnightly event that takes place a week from between a week before and a week after St. David's Day. So we're right at the heart of it. If you look at Wells Week London, there is about more than 100 events there. You can, what we're trying to achieve here is an annual event where we're trying to go to different parts of Wales or doing things online that can, you know, promote the links between the two. So say, for example, what the talk you would have had today instead of me talking today would have been about Dylan Thomas's adventures in Iran in the early 1950s, where he was asked to promote British Petroleum through certain, you know, promotional PR activity sort of thing. And Dylan Thomas, in his very Dylan Thomas way, did more than that. He was obviously, well, he was meant to be there for 5 days, actually was there for a lot longer. So those sorts of things, we'd love to bring those sorts of adventures and links to Wales and Iran to greater life. And I think we're trying to do that in, you know, I think we're talking about doing an event in Aberystwyth, for example, you know, Lloyd Llewellyn Jones, as we mentioned quite a few times here, he's got links to the Welsh Bard, the poet Bard. So I think that, you know, we're trying to get use that link between Welsh and Iranian poetry to life. And I think we might do an event about Sir William Jones, as we said, the son of, what I like to call the son of Pi, instead of the life of Pi, that famous film, but the son of Pi. So again, those sorts of things that can bring it to life through academia, because I think it's quite important, because, you know, Welsh people are very passionate about academia, and so is Iran's got a very strong history of academia as well. So it's just kind of bringing that to life through events, through connecting with one another. So it's just, for example, it's great to see so many people here today and opening your eyes to what could, you know, increase those links, really.
Terrific. Okay. Well, John, I want to thank you very much for this wonderful discussion, for stepping in also at the very last moment. And we look forward to this cooperation with you and with the events that are taking place in Wales to highlight the Welsh-Iranian connection. And with
thank
that,
so
I want
much.
To thank everybody from wherever they are. So may I bid folks either a good morning or a good afternoon or a good evening from wherever you are. And thanks for attending. And with that, may I say thank you again, John. And thanks to all the audience who were able to attend. Bye-bye now, and thanks again.
Bye-bye now. Thank you.